The following takes place between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Standard Eastern Time.
Once I'm officially regional manager, my first order of business will be to demote Jim Halpert. So I will need a new number two. My ideal choice? Jack Bauer. But he is unavailable, fictional, and overqualified.
The following takes place between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. Following takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m.
Hello?
This is Chloe.
Hey, this is Conan. I need directions to the Emmy Awards.
Who is this? How did you get this number?
Chloe, listen to me.
Jack?
I'm on a hijacked subway car. I need you to get in touch with the president. Tell him that if I can't get access to the R3 satellite codes, millions of people will die.
Look, there is no time for chit-chat. I also want a reservation at a good Italian restaurant, West Hollywood, 10:30, 11-ish.
Chloe, what's going on?
Get off the phone, idiot.
Yeah, idiot.
I think she meant you.
I don't think so, Kiefer.
My name is Jack Bauer, and I'll get off this line.
All right, Jack Bauer.
Sorry, Jack, I'm patching you through to the president now.
Kiefer.
Chloe, I need those schematics now.
What? Who is this?
I'm Jack Bauer. Who the hell are you?
Me? I'm Imeda Duty.
Chloe, find out all you can about Imeda Duty. Does anyone there know Imeda Duty?
Imeda Duty, wealthy Saudi financier, disappeared into Afghanistan in the late 90s.
Really?
No, Jack, it's a joke name. You're being set up.
Damn it!
Okay, well, what if you were, like, stuck in a trap in the woods and, like, a cougar was trying to eat you? Would you date that?
That's insane. Why would that even happen?
I have no idea. Forget that. Because maybe your dad is the head of some elite counter-terrorist unit and he only has 24 hours to... I don't know. The point is, would you date?
I guess.
I knew it.
And textiles.
I need the drugs! Works for Jack Bauer.
Would you please welcome our esteemed guest and star of everything you've ever enjoyed in life, Kiefer Sutherland.
Kiefer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Happy anniversary today.
20 years. I cannot. It's mind boggling. You kind of really don't realize what, for me at least, 24 was such an integral part of my life and for a decade that it literally feels like we were working yesterday. So it's just amazing to think that 20 years ago today, the series started to
amazing.
Air.
I mean, we loved having you on the podcast, on the 20 years of 24 podcast a couple months ago. And I enlisted my friend, Rachel Guthrie, who's also Canadian. So we're all Canadians here. We're all Canadian. And I'm going to introduce you to her, and she's going to walk you through and talk to you and ask some great questions. She's all ready.
Okay, so, great. Thank you.
Rachel, Kiefer, Kiefer, Rachel.
Rachel, very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you, Kiefer. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is a pretty special event.
Well, absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Well, I thought I'd, start off the interview with a little nostalgia for all of your fans, saying that the following takes place between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
The following takes place between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Standard Eastern Time.
Amazing. Well, November 6th is a really special day. You know, as Ryan said, it marks 20 years of this show hitting the air, day one, episode one, hour one.
Yeah.
A lot of us feel that this really changed the trajectory of TV. And, you know, you were a really big part of that. Tell us, like, how did you come into this role as Jack Bauer?
I was so lucky. And in hindsight, it almost appears like I did everything to make sure it didn't happen. But Joel Surnow had talked to Stephen Hopkins, who was directing the pilot. And between the two of them, they decided I would be right for the part. And Stephen Hopkins and I were friends, and he contacted me. I remember going to the first meeting, and I had a car accident, and so I didn't make that meeting. I ended up meeting later that day. Wasn't sure that I wanted to do a television show. A bunch of things were in the way. And at the very end of it, Susan Bimel, who I work with, basically said, "Are you crazy? You're doing this job." And she was right. And I accepted the part. And it ended up being arguably the most exciting thing that I've ever done professionally. So, and certainly changed my life for the better. And so grateful that everything kind of lined up to let me do it.
Wow, that's amazing. So when you read the first script, what was your reaction when you had that first read?
Well, it was, I had not done a television show before. So it was very odd for me because I was trying to imagine what episode two would be like and what episode three might be like. And so I didn't even really give it a very fair read because I was kind of anticipating all of the different potential directions that the show could go. Some that I was very excited about and some that I wasn't so excited about. In the end, obviously Joel and Bob and their team wrote 216 amazing episodes of 24 that I was privileged to be a part of, but having not done a television series before, there were so many questions that just are simply unanswerable when you're reading a pilot that I remember looking at Everything Takes Place in Real Time, which was the very first sentence of the pilot. And I went, what the does that mean? And kind of brushed over it. And it wasn't until episode three that I kind of understood the real premise of doing everything in real time. So, I was a work in progress.
That's okay. We're all a work in progress. So, up until this point, you had only done really, movies, films. So what was it that made you say, yeah, I'm going to go the TV route?
Well, television was changing. And you were very kind and said that 24 was one of the vehicles that kind of helped television change, and I agree with you, but it certainly was changing earlier than that. And I can go all the way back to Hill Street Blues, was a show that I absolutely loved. It was a Stephen Bochco show. It was gritty. In many circumstances, I felt it was more realistic than a lot of movies that I was watching. And then you had ER, and ER was a game changer for me as well. And even as a filmmaker, and I directed a few films. At this point, I was trying to figure out how ER managed to get the look that they did on the budget they did. I was trying to understand, how they were approaching shooting their shows in that way. So I was very aware that there was high-end television to do and that there were shows that I was enjoying more than a lot of movies that I was seeing at the time. And I felt very strongly that 24 had the potential to do that. Of course, everything in the beginning stages is a roll of the dice. And, I could never have imagined back then that everything would go the way it did and we would be as fortunate as we were. Certain bands work and certain bands don't. And for whatever reason, Joel, John Cassar, Bob, Howard Gordon, the cast, which was extraordinary, and the fact that everybody kind of gelled and whatever we did, Mary Lynn, Carlos, Rayko Aylesworth, just the list is huge, the depth of cast that we had. But for whatever reason, it just all gelled. And you can try and duplicate it and do that again 1,000 times and it wouldn't work. But for whatever reason, at that moment in time, that group of people, which I was so grateful to be a part of, just gelled.
Excellent. Yeah. When I think about 24 and, the fact that it went so many seasons on the same concept of it being one day, that really struck me as something that was an incredible thing to achieve and still have, you're leaving on a high note, right? You're, just it's such a great, great concept. Part of that 9 seasons, you filmed in different locations. Mm-hmm. Was there one that you would say, yeah, that was actually my favorite place to film?
well, yeah, it's going to be London, England.
Yes, kind of.
It's either that or Simi Valley, and nothing against Simi Valley, but London is London. London, England, actually, where we shot season 9, was maybe the only location I've been on for over 5 months that I was really bummed out to leave. You know, and I know for a fact, and I don't care what he says, John Cassar felt the same way. So yeah, there was just something very special. I mean, London was rocking and rolling at that time. The world was in a pretty good place, and we had a blast there at that time.
That's awesome. So kind of tying into that, would you then say your favorite storyline would match the favorite film location, or was your favorite storyline maybe a different one?
No, my favorite storyline, I think, you know, I'm going to have to go with season 1 just because everything was so fresh. I mean, I had a saying, you know, when I'd read the first script for every new season, I would look at John Cassar and I go, oh my God, how many bad days can one guy have? Right. So there was something so fresh and exciting about season 1. And for me as an actor, it was all on mine territory. So, you know, there was a really interesting moment for Jack Bauer at the end of season 2, where just the pressure and the weight of that day, he broke down and he started to cry. But all of those moments that character kind of had in all the other seasons, all of that was kind of structured and built and designed in season 1. So I'm going to always have an affection, you know, for the first one.
Yeah. I think it was definitely, it was one of those, every new episode was something new and real and raw. So
And we were learning how to film it too. I mean, for the first couple episodes, all the driving shots we would actually do, there's a thing called a process truck, and it tows the car that you're filming on, and then you mount cameras on the car itself, and it's really time consuming. And we shot like that for the first few episodes. And I think it might've even been Michael Click, who was a first AD at the time, who became a very incredibly valuable producer. I think it was him who said, we can't do this anymore. And so we started doing everything on the process stage. And so we kind of perfected, I think, in my opinion, we would have someone go out in Los Angeles and film where we would drive. And then we would project that. By the end of season 1, I couldn't tell the difference whether it was real or not. And so we were figuring out, as the writers were figuring out how to tell the story, we were figuring out how to film it, we were figuring out how to act it. And that whole first season was an amazing education. And it's what brought us, I think, together very close, because at the end of the day, the crew that we had from season 1, 98% of that crew was with us at the end of season 8. And that's something I'm probably the most proud of with the show, is that we were together.
That is amazing. You know, probably, you know, having those same people on, you know, episode after episode, season after season, you know, it created this, you know, this feeling of family, right? You know, you're continuing on to that next chapter. And what did that mean to you, just to have that kind of a dedicated crew over that many seasons?
Well, it's hard to put into words, you know, and a lot of credit, I'm going to call out Tina Cassar, John's wife. A lot of credit goes to her because she had the best barbecues, and we would do them every month, and she would invite the entire cast and crew, and everybody showed up. So there was this very familiar and family sense and atmosphere. But also in the sense that where I say it's hard to put into words, a guy who was camera A operator, who did almost all of the handheld work. Guy and Jay were the two operators, and just extraordinary talents. I went to say goodbye to Guy at the very last shot of season 8, and I shook his hand, and I meant to say, it's been an absolute honor. Thank you for being my dance partner. And I couldn't finish the sentence. And I'm not a real crier, but even now I'm about to go. It was like saying goodbye to a brother. And I felt that way about everybody on that crew. Guy and I just happened to work intimately together a lot. But I felt very strongly about that. And I do remember having to kind of walk away for a minute because I got very, very emotional about that moment because I was saying goodbye to people that I had seen every day, 5 days a week, 9 to 10 months a year, 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day. And I wasn't going to be able to see them like that anymore. And it was heartbreaking. So it's just hard to describe how much it meant to me that 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, I can just imagine the impact that they still have on you all this time later, just in how you're answering it. And you're saying, oh, I'm emotional. Almost.
Well, okay. And I'll give you a hint. On my phone, I have a list of kind of the cast and over the years, and, you know, it's been 20 years and I desperately don't want to get someone's name wrong or something like that. And just going through the list, the smile on my face and people that as soon as we finish talking, I'm going to call and go, oh my God, I haven't spoken to you for a couple of years. I miss you so much. How are you? So I'll thank Joel for putting this whole thing together. Just for that alone. It was such a special thing. As an actor, for me, at least, all you want to do is work, you know, and you're so grateful for the opportunity because there's so many great actors out there that don't have the same opportunity. So to be able to do 200 and something episodes of a show that you absolutely love, oh my God, you know, the gift of a lifetime. And I will always feel that way about it.
That's incredible. That is an incredible gift to have that. Start well.
I'm the luckiest guy I know.
That's awesome. So, you know, as you were going into it, and a few of the other actors and actresses have kind of alluded to this today, you know, reading each script, not knowing what the next episode held for your character, right? Mm-hmm. You know, were you going to live? Were you going to die? What was going to happen? You know, how did you process that week to week over those, you know, 200 plus some episodes?
Well, it was really hard. I'll give you a funny instance and I'll give you a one that was really difficult for me. The funny instance was in season one, you know, we're reading along and then it just says Nina Myers is shot and left in a ditch, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to kill Nina. And it wasn't for two more episodes that we find out that she hadn't died, but we laughed about it, you know, in hindsight a lot. And then my wife, Terry, she dies. And I felt so strongly that that was a mistake. I felt you can't expect an audience to root for a character to only have him fail and not be able to save his wife. And everybody looked at me and said, well, okay. And I remember saying something as stupid as, you know, well, I want it written down somewhere that I disagree with this. And they laughed at me and said, okay, it's duly noted. You disagree. We're still killing her. And, you know, and it's hard because, you know, Leslie was my friend, you know, and such a good actor. And she was so great to work with. But for the show, they were absolutely right. In fact, I remember Joel Surnow and Bob getting an award from the Film Critics Association or the Television Critics Association. Sorry. And the person giving them the award was a critic who said, for 6 days, I hated these guys for killing Terry Bauer at the end of season two. And then for the last 6 months, I admired them for killing Terry at the end of season one, you know, and they were right, you know, and that was one of the big things that did change kind of, you know, what was considered to be network television, that you were able to do something like that to a lead character. It was a really brave choice that they made. And again, as I said earlier, that I was a work in progress, still am, you know, I certainly wasn't always right about what I felt was right for the show, but I certainly learned an incredible amount because in hindsight, you know, they made the right choice.
Yeah. And I think for us fans too, watching that first season, you know, watching the relationship between yourself and Terry and Kim, and, you know, you're trying to make things work. It's about second chances. And then at the very end, you know, Terry gets killed off, and mm-hmm. it's by Nina. You know, I yeah. think that for us, we were like, what? No, that, you know, I think we were equally with you. No, that's wrong. But, but like you say, you have to kind of go back and sit with it for a bit for it to kind of.
Well, and Joel had a bunch of, Joel was kind of a big moment guy, right? Mm-hmm. He would come up with the big moments like that. And it's hard to explain, because on some level, it's almost soap operatic. And you instinctively go, oh, I don't know. But once you commit to doing it as an actor and playing the character, oh my God, it becomes the most fun you can ever have. So thanks, Joel.
Yeah. So something that was a little bit more rare for you when you were doing 24 is that you were a lead actor, but doing your own stunt work. You know, often there's a stunt double, you know, so you can prevent injuries. So what was it like kind of being that rogue kind of actor doing your own stunt work? And did you have any injuries?
Well, it was within reason. I had great stunt doubles, you know, throughout 24. We pushed the limit, I think, of what we could do. I remember at one point I was doing a scene, and behind me, these huge oil tanks were going to explode. And they were on a timer based on where I was running at the point. But once they started to blow those tanks, I still had to make a sharp left turn. And I remember thinking to myself, if I fall, I'm going to be in real trouble. So don't, you know, just whatever you do, don't fall. And I didn't. And I ran as fast as I physically could. And when the take was finished, there was the fabric on my jacket was all singed. You know, the fire came that close. Now, it was perfectly safe. But, you know, you still feel the heat of those explosions and everything else. So I do know that we kind of, and we rehearsed that stuff, and we had incredibly talented stunt coordinators and special effects people. But I think if you're going to try and make something as believable as possible, you're going to take it, you know, to the edge of that all the time. And so for me, it was an exciting aspect of the show. It was a challenging aspect of the show. I never had any injuries. Camera operators did sometimes, because they would have their camera, but they would only be able to see out of one eye. And so their depth perception is off. It's not funny, but I can still see Guy doing a handheld shot where he just walked into a piece of scaffolding and he never dropped the camera. But I'm doing the scene. I'm also watching his head start to bleed. And I'm like, this isn't good. Should we cut? And I guess if he's not going to cut, I'm not going to cut. And we finished the shot. But I still remember watching the bump on his head grow while we were doing the scene. And so that was the kind of commitment that we had from our crew, which was pretty exceptional.
That's amazing. And what do you do, right? Keep going. Okay.
If he's tough enough to do it, you better not blow it. Yeah.
No kidding. So you, you've been an actor for many years. You've done lots of movies and 24 and a couple of other TV shows, but another love of yours is music.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Specifically country music. And I know yesterday you released a new song from an album that is coming out, Two-Stepping in Time. Mm-hmm. Great song. Listen to it a couple of times. Just absolutely love it. So, in that you play guitar and you sing. So what has that journey been like, you know, from big actor, both TV, big screen, to now still?
I just like playing. So, you know, if someone's going to give me an opportunity to play, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. They're similar in the sense that, you know, I was very excited with the writers and the other actors and the crew to tell the story of 24. That was my job as an actor. And I was part of that large band to do that. Songwriting and singing and performing is very similar. The song is the story that you want to tell, and it's a personal thing that would have happened to me that I'm going to share with an audience, and maybe something similar has happened to them, and we find a common bond and a sense of understanding. And anytime those kinds of moments happen, I think those are good, and that brings us closer together and a better understanding of each other as people, and that's really positive. So that's the similarity. In the context of kind of talking about 20 years of 24, I certainly got to play more guitar than I got to act when we were shooting 24, because, you know, you do your master shot and you finish that, and then it's going to be another hour and a half before they break all of that equipment down and then reset it for the over the shoulders shots. And then they got to break that down, and then they go into coverage and they go into singles and close-ups and everything. So it's a really long process. And so in between all of those setups, you know, I just go back to my trailer and play guitar and start writing something. Got to play a lot of guitar on that show.
That's awesome. So, you know, you have a big fan base with 24. Did you notice any crossover of, you know, hey, we like him as Jack Bauer in 24 or an actor, and now we're going to like his music as well. Have you found that crossover?
Not particularly. Having said that, you know, I have certainly played enough shows over time that someone will yell out Jack Bauer, you know, and I'll say, well, he's not here tonight, but thank you very much. And you know, so, you know, certainly in the beginning, I'm aware of the fact that was a huge reason why people might come see a show. And it's my job and the other people in my band's job to put on a good show and hope they come back. And so far it's been going all right.
That's awesome. So is there a song that you love playing and love singing?
All of them. You know, again, what I hadn't anticipated about music was how much I was going to enjoy playing live. And I do. I mean it very strongly that I think that if you can come away having a shared experience that some of the things that I'm writing about are things that you're going through or have gone through as well, and that we realize that we've got more in common than we thought, that's a great night. And, I've been able to perform to audiences that have made me feel that way for 10 years now. And so grateful for those people. It's been an amazing experience.
That's incredible. And, you know, and kind of you tied that connection of storytelling, right? Your storytelling as a character in the movie or show you're playing, but also in the music that you're sharing. Mm-hmm. You know, so when we talk about the story of Jack Bauer, mm-hmm. You know, are you happy where Jack Bauer ended up?
No, I mean, I think that there was discussion about every aspect of this. You know, does he get to come home and be happy and comfortable? No, that doesn't really suit the show. Is he going to die? People didn't want to do that. You know, so I think it was just kind of mutually agreed upon that we leave him in a place and maybe one day we'll try and pull him out of that. You know, but there was something so kind of honorable about the character. And you know, and I've said more than once, you know, on my best day, I'm not anywhere close to Jack Bauer. I think he's a really honorable guy. And he's one of those people, and we have them in our society that take on the work that we don't want to do, and they take on the responsibilities that we don't want to burden ourselves with. And those people, sadly, are confronted with insurmountable odds. And I take my hat off to the person that plays a game that they know they're going to lose, you know, and Jack Bauer was that guy. And it was such an interesting device about developing that character that, you know, he's given five tasks to accomplish. And if he's lucky, he's going to accomplish three out of the five. Those aren't good odds. You know, that's, and I don't think any of us as people strive to have a life like that. And yet this guy takes on that life knowing that he's not gonna succeed across the board, and he still does it. So there's that just alone was kind of the root of the character for me. And I loved him for it. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah. So when you were talking about the, you know, playing the character of, you know, kind of saving the day, he was always, you know, trying to save the president, and, you know, when whatever the crisis was, when I look at your role in Designated Survivor, for example, mm-hmm. in that show, you are the president and you have mm-hmm. other people, you know, playing the role of Jack Bauer, but, you know, surrounding you. How was that flip for you, right?
Well, it would make me smile. You know, we shot that in Toronto, Canada, and we dealt with a lot of weather. And I do remember looking at the various people that were going to do all of the kind of Jack Bauer-esque work on that show. And I'd be all warm in my Oval Office and I'd be like, oh, you're going to go outside and do that run now, are you? Have fun. and I knew they'd be doing that for 4 hours. So, you know, having done my time doing that, I afforded myself a little chuckle, maybe at their expense.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
No, and then us Canadians, our weather is unpredictable at the best of times, the Toronto area. So yeah, that's awesome. So kind of going back to Jack, is his story finished?
Well, no, because even if it's in the imagination of the audience, you know, they're going to wonder where he's being held. What kind, you know, has he escaped? What's he going to do? I hope not. I hope that there's some resolution to it personally. But we'll have to see. You know, it's something that I've said, you know, I would never be opposed to entertaining the idea. You know, but I'm not the writer, and someone would have to present me with a script. And but I also think, and I've said this a number of times, that I do believe that the idea is bigger than any one person who was in the show or worked on the show. And I do believe that 24 as a concept will certainly be revisited again.
Awesome. You know, a couple of times through this last, you know, half an hour or so, you've talked about storytelling. That's something that you've brought up, you know, a few times. So what is it that excites you so much about storytelling?
Every time I say storytelling, Zach Cassar has to have a drink. storytelling, it's what actors do. It's what you get into it for. You know, and whether they're make-believe or whether they're true stories, they're how we understand each other. I can't underplay and understate the importance of society and how we tell stories and how those stories impact and inform our behavior. And so, you know, Chekhov wrote in The Seagull, Trepalov's opening monologue, he writes, "I watch these high priests of the sacred art teach us how to walk, drink, make love, and wear our clothes." They teach us how to live, and they tell us what's cool and what's not cool, and they tell us what's right and wrong. You know, I can go back to Bambi, and you know, one of the first movies I ever saw as a person, and I still walk around going, you know, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say nothing at all. That was taught to me by a movie, right? Yeah. So it informed me as a young person what was right, what was wrong, how to be. And that, to me, is what storytelling is. It's us as a society deciding what's important and valuable to us. And it's different in different societies. You know, Asian culture is very different than North American culture, is very different than European culture, very different than African culture. And so each area, each group, each society, the storytelling is really what defines that culture. And so it's incredibly important, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, that saying from Bambi, I say that to my kids quite often. Don't say it if it's not nice.
If you don't have something nice to say, don't say nothing at all. That was Thumper's first line.
Who knew it'd be so, you know, relevant.
Profound. Yeah.
Awesome.
And boy, if there was ever a time that was something that people should use as a mantra, That's right.
So, you know, my last kind of question, and I'm sure Ryan has some questions as well for you, is, you know, what is the enduring impact for you for playing Jack Bauer?
You know, it's on so many levels. It certainly, you know, was a highlight of my career, and it allowed me to do work that I would not have been allowed to do had I not had the success of 24. And so for that, I'm incredibly grateful. For the family of friends and coworkers that will last me the rest of my life, I am grateful for those moments. You know, and it was also a really exciting time in my life. I was 33 years old when I started 24, and I was, you know, older than that when I finished. Those were my best years, you know, and I got to do a show that I absolutely loved, and I got to do it with people that I loved. Mm-hmm. I couldn't ask for anything more. And that will be kind of the really enduring legacy for me of what it was like to do that show. And I learned a lot. You know, it's when I started out as an actor, there was this kind of idea that if you did one movie every 2 years, that was good, and you wouldn't overdo it, and audiences would still really appreciate your work. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, if someone wants to make the Olympics, they train every day. I learned more as an actor working every day for 10 years than I ever could have in any other circumstance. So it was one of the great educations that I've ever had. And that'll be part of its enduring legacy for me.
Absolutely. So I started by talking about, you know, this being November 6th, being the 20th anniversary of when it was first aired. So, you know, what is the significance of today for you?
20 years, what a drag. I didn't, you know, I wish it was less. Time going by way too fast. But the fact is I still run into people today that really love 24 and tell me very funny stories. I'll never forget. There was a couple that a guy came up to me and said, "You ruined my honeymoon." And I'm like, "I don't even know you." And I got pretty defensive. Like, I don't know you. I don't know your wife. I don't know what you think, but it didn't happen. And he said, no. You know, we watched the first 12 episodes of 24. We flew from Los Angeles to Paris. And we watched the first 12 episodes on the plane. And the idea was we'd watch the last 12 on the way back. And they didn't wait. So the first day of their honeymoon, they watched the next 12 episodes of 24. And I said, "Wow, we really did ruin your honeymoon. I'm very sorry." But it was such a kind of sweet story. And I run into people like that all the time. And so there is a huge number of people that I will never meet. That I owe a debt of gratitude to, that allowed me to do the thing I love to do in a show that I love doing. And their support of it was the reason I got to do it. And so, you know, I will forever, you know, before I go to bed at night, I will always just say thank you.
I laugh at the story about the honeymoon. When season two came out, I watched season one by myself, and I said to, you know, a few people, "You got to watch this show. Like, don't be dumb.
Well, thank you.
Season one, got to watch it." And so in season two, it was, I think, about 3 weeks in, I had our son. He's now 19. And they said, "Oh, well, lucky for you, you can go home today." I'm like, "Well, good, because 24's on and I can't miss it." And so then they came back and said, "Oh, sorry, you have to stay for another day." And I said, "Well, you're going to have to put the TV back on, because 24, I can't miss this show." And so I think it cost me about $100, and I got the TV all, you know, reinstalled, and, you know, 24 gets on, everything's quiet, and my phone rings, and it's my friend from Calgary. And I'm like, "I'm really sorry. It's a bad time. Jack Bauer's on. I'll call you back."
Well, and first of all, thank you from the bottom of my heart. But there were people out there, you know, and millions of people out there that treated the show like that. And, you know, I am just so grateful for that. And to all those people out there, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Yeah. You gave me the gift of a lifetime.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think I speak for everyone who's tuned in here, and we feel the same. You well, gave sure.
Good. Again, common ground. So good. Good.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to see if Ryan's ready to jump back on here. I know he's the man with the plans. So.
Okay. Well, Rachel, thank you so much. I enjoyed this a great deal. Be well. And to your son's name is Jason?
No, my son's name is Anakin, actually.
Anakin. I am very sorry. Please tell him I said hello. And Bye. Thanks for letting you watch the show every hour for a week and tell him congratulations on being so young.
That's right.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Yes. It's been a pleasure to,
thank you.
Interview you and just talk to you. Just have a conversation. It's been.
Well, thank you very much. The pleasure has been mine.
Yeah. You know, Kiefer, we thought it was appropriate to have a family reunion, seeing as it's the date, November 6th, 20 years ago today. So we have invited Terry.
Oh, my God.
And Kim. Hi, honey.
How are you?
Well, they have real names, but we call them Terry and Kim.
You Happy can call me Kim. Kiefer. You can call me Kim. That's fine. I'm good with it.
How are you?
Good.
Where are you?
Leslie, you start.
I'm in Langley. I'm near Vancouver, Kiefer.
Oh, my gosh. There you are. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, sweetheart?
You look beautiful. I'm great. Thank you. I'm great.
Where are you?
I am in my secret lair. I'm actually home. I'm in Toronto.
Oh, how nice. Oh, it's so nice to see you.
Thank you. And you. What are you doing in Langley, Virginia?
I'm directing here. I'm on a gig here that has me here for another couple of weeks. And
oh,
I'll be back again in March.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So nice to see you.
You too. Were you blushing this morning? We were all singing your praises this morning without you.
Oh, well, that's thank you very much. And back at you. Rachel and I were talking earlier and she asked me which was my favorite season. And I love, in all fairness, I loved all of them, but there's not, you know, the first season is the first season. And it's when we kind of discovered everything for the show. And I just, you know, it just brought back so many kind of sweet memories. So,
yeah.
No. Can you believe it's been 20 years?
No, come on.
Man, that's like getting hit in the face with a shovel.
But you two look
a really soft shovel, a soft shovel.
Mint condition, well, both of you. I saw Alicia this morning and you too, Kiefer. Mint.
Well, I've been embalmed.
it's good to have the family back together. We were saying, Kiefer, we were saying earlier, if Alicia hadn't climbed out the window, none of us would be here today.
There was always that. I remember having conversations with Howard Gordon right to the bitter end, which was, why doesn't anybody just do what I say? People would just do what I say. No one would be in trouble. And we would laugh about that a lot.
That's for Kiefer and Jack Bauer. It's
so funny to see Alicia because, you know, she was so young when we started.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to watch just watch her grow up over the years in doing the show and just watching her career blossom and all of this stuff. And it was just, but it was very funny because I have a dog who was just a couple of years younger than Alicia. And so it was very interesting for me because I felt, you know, I had a daughter at home. And then when I went to work, I actually felt very protective over Alicia like a father would. And so, and she was just so amazing. So nice to see you again.
It's so good to see you. And it's so funny because it's interesting. I always would be cautious about, you know, going on other shows after my time on 24 was over because I'd always, all my references would be the show. And I never wanted to come across that I was like bragging about being on this like big show, but that was my only experience. And I think we kind of touched on it earlier where when we were shooting 24, the hours and the time we spent together was so much like a fishbowl. I would go home, sleep, come back, and it would be, you know, they were my family. They were who I, you know, spoke to on a daily basis. I mean, there was no time for socializing or going to dinners. I mean, it was a lot to do with my time. Those 4 years were so dedicated to being on that set. And it was such a huge influence on my career and Kiefer too, especially like, I can't thank you enough because every show after that, you know, the benchmark of being, you know, the head guy and setting the tone for a series the way you did stuck with me. You know, sometimes it was blatant advice and sometimes it was just me watching you, you know, conduct yourself and be so prepared and
thank you.
And so like, yeah, and really made the other actors accountable, you know. So it was like later on it kind of trickled into all my work and, you know, how to be and how to be professional and just, you know, without it, I mean, I wouldn't be the actor that I am. I mean, it just, you put such a stamp on me, you know, professionally.
Oh, so sweetheart, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. When you were saying that, you know, you would go home and basically sleep and come straight back to work. And I don't know if Leslie remembers this, but there were about 12 of us that often didn't go home.
That's right.
Yeah,
we had a bunch of
Teamsters that were from Louisiana, and so they lived in our base camp, and they had their trailers, and they were a lot of fun. And I remember more than once, I was like, "Yeah, I don't need to go home," and I just hang out with them. And
we had a lot of great rodeo guys, didn't we? Like Transpo, yeah. We're all like the I mean, legends in the rodeo world. So it was you know, my only regret is that I was too young. I didn't get to have as much fun or party with these guys the way I wish I could have. I mean, maybe it was better off, but I really, you know,
they were good guys. We had some fun and you know, and that lasted a couple of years, and then we weren't allowed to do that anymore. But those first couple of years, it was like the Wild West, and we worked hard, but we had as much fun. We played pretty hard too, and it was kind of the whole experience. And I'm sure I shouldn't be saying as much as I am, but the whole experience was just so exciting and fresh and new. And one thing that I will never forget was very early on, our crew started to realize that we were making a pretty cool and different show. And they took a kind of pride in it that was so infectious. And you know, the responsibility for the success of that show really goes across the board, from the Teamsters to the producers, to the writers, to the actors, to the camera crews, sound crews, stunt people. I mean, just across the board, everybody had a part to play. And we just got so lucky. I've certainly not had an experience like it since, and may never. It was something that was, I think, very special to all of us.
I have a question from the fans. How can three Canadians become the ultimate American family?
Well, I've always said this. I don't believe art, and by this I mean painting, music, film, television. I don't believe in borders for art. You know, but it is ironic. And then John Cassar, the director, lead director of 24, for certainly from season two on, he's Canadian. Rodney Charters, the cinematographer, was Canadian. Mm-hmm. We're slowly taking over America.
John just jumped in the wave. Yes. Oh, come back, John. Come back.
Yes.
John.
That's amazing.
John, I got it. John got involved with this and then it just blew up. It really, it's been, we have 18 countries represented by the fans today.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Belgium, Japan, the Netherlands, a little place called Canada, the US.
Yeah. it's pretty amazing. It's one of the other things that was so unique about 24 was its worldwide success. And that you don't see from American television. So that's pretty extraordinary. And that's a real credit to Joel and Bob for the idea and for the writing. But you know, we also Fox Television did a great job in kind of distributing the film worldwide and doing that. You know, again, it was just one of those circumstances. You just can't imagine how well it kind of all played out. But the fact that it did as well worldwide was something also equally exciting.
Well, we have enjoyed having you on today. We're so grateful that you chose to spend the day with us and with the fans from all over the world and reunite with the family. We heard the term family so much from cast and crew. The word is so strong, but it's been evidenced through every conversation we've had for the last 8 months. The word
family. Well, you always feel that it's going to come off as trite, you know, because a lot of people say that about their experiences on film and television. I can, and I've had amazing experiences throughout my career, but I can absolutely unequivocally say that I have not had an experience the same as 24. Mm-hmm. It was just unique. It was special. And there's nothing wrong with that. I was, it was just a really fortunate time. And again, so all the fans that are watching today, you guys made this happen for us. And you can certainly hear in our voices how much this experience meant to us. And at the end of the day, you guys gave it to us. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you all out there. Just meant the world to me. Thank you.
Typical barrister.